Hello, I'm Sebastian Fauch, and this is Up for Research, the podcast from Western Sydney University, where you get the latest update on world-class science. If you want to know how trees or forests cope with climate change now and in the future, then you're listening to the right show. With me is Professor Brendan Choate, a world expert in plant physiology. Brendan works at the Hawkesbury Institute for the Environment. He's got a PhD from James Cook nearly 20 years ago, and since then he has worked at Harvard, UC Davis, and various research institutions in Germany, France, and across Australia. Through his published work, crowned by two Nature papers, he has become an undisputed authority in his field. Alexander von Humboldt and ARC Future Fellowships have certainly helped to get him listed as one of Australia's highly cited researchers by Clarivet Analytics. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Sebastian. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here. And you're making me feel a bit old, a little bit humble as well after that description.
Well, it's all true. It's all true. Brendan, what does a plant physiologist actually do?
Okay, good question. So plant physiologists study the way that plants function. And this is a whole range of things that plants do. This is everything from growth to reproduction, photosynthesis, of course, and water transport, respiration, signaling. My specialty within plant physiology, because plant physiology is a very broad field and people specialize within it, is plant water relations and plant water transport. So I study how plants attain water, how it moves around the body, and how they regulate its loss to the environment.
What's motivating you to do this kind of work?
Good question. So I think to answer that, I'd have to go back to when I was doing at the end of my undergraduate degree and my first real independent research project in my honours. And that was in the late 1990s. And the central theory of plant water transport, the cohesion tension theory, which we'll talk more about later, was being challenged at that time. And so it was just this incredibly exciting time in the field because you had this theory which was really the equivalent of how blood is pumped around the human body or animal circulatory systems work, something really basic and foundational of how an organism works. And that was being challenged in terms of how water is transported from the roots up to the leaves. So that got me incredibly engaged with this field. And since then, I've just become more and more fascinated over the course of my career. There's been lots of new opportunities with new technologies opening up. And yeah, I continue to be interested in it.
Cool. Well, we will get also to your current projects very shortly that you're working on. I think it's necessary to get a few fundamentals out of the way that our listeners need to know. First question, should we be worried about the impacts of climate change on forests?
Yes, we definitely should. Climate change is having a whole range of effects through different interactions, and there are many areas in which the threats to forest will increase.
Okay, second question. Which forests are particularly at risk from climate change globally and in Australia?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's difficult to answer, but I would say potentially all forest types are vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. And that goes from very wet tropical forests in the Amazon, which we've seen recently through the impacts of drought and fire, right through to very dry shrublands and woodlands. And that's because the impacts of increasing temperature, increasing evaporation, increasing storm damage are going to be felt across all of those systems.
Brendan, you work across an incredible range of scale. Can you tell us what the smallest and the largest object or process is that you've ever measured in your work?
Sure. Yeah, I have done a lot of electron microscopy throughout my career and worked with microcomputed tomography. And that, when I'm using those instruments, I'm looking in scales of micrometers down to nanometers. So looking at features in the xylem, which is wood, by another name. It's the water transport tissue of plants. We're looking at features that can be tens of nanometers. And so there's 1,000 nanometers in 1 micrometer and 1,000,000 microns in 1 meter.
Mm. Incredibly small. And now we scale up. Where do we end up?
Yeah, so a lot of the measurements that I do are at the whole plant scale. So I'm doing measurements on an individual tree or plant. And what you can do is, those measurements typically take a long time to do. Physiology takes a long time to do. And if you want to look at larger scales, one thing you can do is combine lots of independent studies that have been done, have been published. You can synthesize that data together and get a view of what's happening at the landscape level. So this can be at the regional level, at continental or global scales.
So we're getting into circulation models, water cycles, carbon uptake potential from landscapes and so on. So really,
exactly, and that
hundreds of kilometers.
In sure, scale. Yeah, mm. Yeah, right up to the global scale where we're having collaborations with modelers who are working with land surface models.
Mm, interesting. When one thinks about working with trees, it appears pretty peaceful and safe. I mean, trees are sessile, and you know, if you're not working there when it's stormy or anything, then what can happen? But I know that your work involves using some quite outlandish instruments. What's the most dangerous technique that you use in your research?
I would have to say that would be the pressure bomb.
The bomb.
The bomb, which is dangerous as it sounds. It is a small container in which you place a leaf to measure the amount of water stress it's under, and you have to pressurize that leaf anywhere between a couple of atmospheres of pressure right up to 10 or more megapascals of pressure. So this is a massive amount of pressure that's contained in a small stainless steel container. But every once in a while, you can have mishaps where the plant flies out the top, or you know, the lid flies off. So it has been, there have been injuries recorded from this instrument. Not to me or anyone in my research group, luckily, but it's certainly qualifies as a dangerous instrument.
We are recording here at the Hawkesbury Institute, where you have your labs. Do you think it's okay to go and have a quick look of what kind of instruments you're using right now?
Sure, yeah, let's go and have a look.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Brendan. Okay, you peeps out there, let's have a walk through Brendan's lab and then get back to his current research that looks into the survival of forests and trees around the world. Let's go. We just arrived in Brendan's plant physiology lab, and there's lots of stuff flying around. I can see tubes and pipes and computers and gas tanks and balances, but I'm also seeing a branch here that looks like it's got some gum nuts on it. Brendan, what is that?
So this is a branch that we are monitoring water stress on as it dries down. And the instrument that we have here, you can't see it at the moment because it's all wrapped up in bubble wrap, but it's a little silver sensor which you clamp onto the side of the stem. Inside that sensor is a tiny chamber with thermocouples to measure the temperature and the humidity. And what we're trying to get at is the humidity adjacent to the wood, which will come into equilibrium after a while. And that will allow us to estimate the water stress or the water potential of that branch. And this is a way in which we can monitor the amount of water stress that a plant is under continuously and remotely, which is something that we can't do with the instrument that I was describing earlier, which is the dreaded pressure bomb.
Which we have here as well, right?
Yes, we have just on the next bench across, you can see it. It's that blue box, which is under the microscope there.
Okay, let's have a look at it. And I can see someone is actually working on it right now.
Yep, we have Dave here, who's just about to do a measurement.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
So he's going to do a measurement. I can see he cut a leaf off that branch, and now he's inserting it into that metal lid.
That's right.
What's happening next?
So we're going to screw it tight to make a seal. Load it into this machine, which is called a pressure chamber or a pressure bomb, and then which is attached to a nitrogen gas tank. And when I increase the pressure,
Yeah,
nitrogen gas will enter the chamber and increase pressure which the leaf is experiencing inside the little chamber.
And then you have a microscope above that. When I was working with a bomb, I still had a hand lens and leaned my head right over it. But this is a bit of a smarter setup. What are you doing?
That's right. So what I'm doing is looking at the cut-off section of the petiole, or the bit where the leaf attaches to the rest of the plant. And it's got a nice flat surface. And so what I'm looking for is water that's being forced out of the leaf and up through the petiole. And
as far as I remember, you're looking for the balance point, right?
That's right. So it's when the pressure that's inside the chamber is balanced against the water potential of the leaf. So how much the leaf wants to hold onto the water.
So you reach the balance point.
That's right. And then, so I record the amount of pressure that was at the balance point, and then I release the pressure out of the chamber.
Right, so it's safe basically again to touch the lid and get your leaf out, get the next leaf
right
into the chamber.
Unscrew.
So what was your measurement?
It was, for that one, 1.95 megapascals.
And is that high for that particular branch that you're looking at, or is it in the range that you expected?
So the base of the branch I've removed from the bucket of water, so the branch is drying out, and yes, that's getting down to severe water stress for this kind of plant.
What is this kind of plant again?
I believe it's a brush box, a Lophostomon confertus.
Right. Bloody street trees. There's another tree on the bench. What's that one, Brendan?
That is a cotton plant, actually.
A cotton plant. So you're not only working with trees, you're also working with crops, other types of plants.
Yes, this is a collaboration that we have going with a couple of other researchers in Hawkesbury Institute for the Environment, where they are looking to produce more stress-tolerant cotton. And so what we actually have is some wild relatives of Gossypium, which is the genus that cotton is in, and some cultivars of cotton itself. And they're comparing how tolerant the cotton cultivar is to the wild relative and seeing what traits we might be able to co-opt from that wild relative into the cultivars that we have at the moment.
What's the next big project being finished up in the lab here and then going out for publication, Brendan?
Oh, I'd tell you, but I'd have to kill you, Sebastian, so that's top secret.
All right. Thanks for taking us to the lab, Brendan. And now we walk back and continue our chat. That was fascinating. Quite scary, too. And as I said, outlandish instruments. I wouldn't expect anyone working with trees having such a range of very high-tech and also very dangerous instruments to handle. But now let's get stuck into your current work, which is mostly around drought damage of forests, risks that come with that, and it seems that you're also now incorporating more and more work around bushfires into your work. Just a few titles of grants that you're working on at the moment. There's one where you want to determine the physiological underpinnings of eucalyptus dieback. There's also the survival of forests under drought, and how rainforests, for example, the Gondwanan rainforests here in New South Wales in the northern parts of the range, really are affected by bushfires, which we haven't seen before. They normally wouldn't burn, that's my understanding, but in 2019-20, they were pretty much wiped out. So you're working in these forests as well. Can you explain to us why does your work that looks into water starts also to look into fire?
Sure, yeah. So one of the central motivations for my work is looking at how trees and forests will be affected by drought. And how I am contributing to that, and how people who work with me are contributing to that, is by measuring thresholds for survival, so stress tolerance thresholds. And this goes right to the heart of the eucalypt dieback project that you mentioned. So a lot of our vegetation in Australia, particularly the eucalypts, are really superbly adapted to surviving drought and surviving bushfire. they have thick bark and they have the ability to resprout after bad droughts and bushfire, either via the lignotuber, which is a big storage organ close to the ground, or through epicormic buds, which are buried under their bark and protected from the from drought stress and from fire. But what we're seeing now, particularly with this most recent, very savage 2017 to 2019 drought, followed by immediately by the Black Summer bushfires, is that it is really pushing the limits for many eucalypt species in terms of what they can survive. So what we're worried about is with increasing temperatures, we have increasing evaporation, and this means that droughts that Australia will always be prone to become worse. They set in earlier, they reach a greater intensity, and they may go for longer. We also, because of that, have an increased risk of bushfire, and that's because, you know, as we saw from the reports that came out after the Black Summer fires, that very high evaporative demand, which means the potential of the atmosphere to dry the vegetation in the soils, that means that the forests really get to this point where they're tinder dry, and then any ignition source is going to start a fire. Those fires become more difficult to control, and resources really get stretched. And that's where you get many fires burning to the point where they join up to become mega fires, and they just become more and more difficult to control. So what we really want to do, we want to be able to help predict the risk to forests that are associated with drought stress and bushfires. And we want to be able to inform what we can do for conservation measures, which are aimed at conserving rare species, and also how, when we're looking at forests as a whole, how we can preserve those ecosystem services, all of the things that the forests do for both for us, for the human population, but also for all of the wildlife which occupies them.
And I guess that links beautifully to that Gondwanan rainforest, because the prolonged drought that we've seen before the Black Summer fires really dried out areas within that rainforest that traditionally never have burned.
Yeah, so I should say that, firstly, it's actually quite a good news story with the Gondwanan forests. They did not burn as much as many people first thought. So the areas that burnt severely were less, and it also seems to be, from some studies that have been published recently, it seems to be recovering quite well.
Fantastic.
So that's a real good news story. So there are plants in there that will resprout or regenerate quickly from seed. That's not to say that they won't be more badly affected in future, though. So what we're looking at now is temperatures warming, so we're getting hotter temperatures, and then when we get a rainless period, greater drought stress, and then greater potential for fires that will burn into those areas that were previously very wet.
Mm. Mm. This is the landscape scale type of work that you've been talking before. Let's just quickly go back to that microscopic work that you're doing, because it's also fascinating to really look into the inside of plants and how they actually work, from how they transport water or nutrients and the ultrastructures that are needed to actually do that. We've got a little sound recording. I'd just like to play that, and you can maybe explain to us what we actually hear. So there's some popping going on, Brendan. What's happening there?
Okay, so that is actually pops that are produced from the xylem, from the little tubes that run through the xylem, which transport water. We have to understand a little bit about the underlying theory of water transport, that cohesion tension theory that I talked about earlier. Basically, water is pulled up through those tubes from the roots up to the leaves, and when it's traveling through the xylem tubes, it's under tension. So it's in the state where it's stretched, and it can actually cavitate. And cavitation is when you have liquid water spontaneously changing into gaseous water. So you have a void that's filled with water vapor, which turns into an embolism, an air bubble, which then blocks transport. And this is one of the major problems for plants when they're trying to survive drought, because the tension will increase with drought and you'll get more propensity for these air bubbles to form. So cavitation, when it occurs, many people have probably heard of it in connection to ship propellers, particularly submarines. It's a bad thing for submarines when they're trying to go undetected, but it means that you get this void produced and there's a lot of energy released when this happens, and that is the popping sound. So if you attach a very sensitive microphone to the outside of a tree, you can actually, and then you expose it to drought stress, you can actually hear these pops and clicks, which are cavitation events occurring inside of the xylem. So it's just a really cool example of how, you know, people normally think of plants as being a very silent world, but they are actually producing very interesting sounds.
But you're also using not just sounds to investigate drought stress and the effects of drought stress, but you're also using other non-invasive technologies.
Yeah, and this is something that we're really excited about. Over the last couple of decades, applying non-invasive imaging techniques such as magnetic resonance imaging and microcomputer tomography, which is a CAT scanner, essentially, that operates at a very high resolution. And this is allowing us really for the first time to get a view inside plants that are living, intact plants, and we can visualize right down to the micron level what's happening inside their water transport systems. And that's stuff that we've done in many facilities around the world, and most recently at the Australian Synchrotron. And they've got some great facilities down there, excellent beam lines which allow us to do measurements at very high resolutions.
We talked about the different scales that you're working at, but you're also doing other work that's not even related to scale, but it's actually looking at citizen science and how to engage people into your work. There's a project that you're running that's called the Dead Tree Detective. What is that about?
Yeah, so the Dead Tree Detective is a citizen science project that we started in 2018. This was started by Professor Belinda Medlin, who's a vegetation modeler, and myself. And we set out to collect records of dead and dying trees. And the old problem in Australia is that we have a huge land area and a relatively small population. So it's very difficult to get across that range in terms of studies that have been funded to get workers out there. So another approach is to enlist citizen scientists. And what we found is that we had increasingly through 2018 into 2019, hundreds and hundreds of people putting in reports, photos of dead trees. And this was the time during which the drought was progressing to its worst phase towards the end of 2019. We had whole hillsides turning brown. We had a lot of people contacting us saying, you know, I've lived in this area for 50 years and I've never seen anything like this. So it was, in the end, a great way to be able to capture those landscape-level effects and involve citizen scientists.
Mm, fascinating. And that's ongoing, right?
Yes, yeah. This is ongoing research. And we also have a number of citizen science projects which we've initiated in the Blue Mountains. There's also some work at the Lithgow Transformation Hub, which is just on the other side of the Blue Mountains, where we're once again going to work with citizen science to do some ecological monitoring and look at recovery from the bushfires.
Mm. Which brings me, particularly with the Blue Mountains being so heavily affected by the Black Summer fires, brings me to my second last question about forest cover in the future. We talked briefly about it at the beginning of this podcast, that it is difficult to answer which forests are more or less affected by climate change. So how would you think will forest cover in the future look like, let's say across Australia, tropical, temperate, cool temperate forests? Will we have more or less?
Yeah, so this is a very difficult question to answer. It's very complex because we have a whole range of interacting factors. CO2 concentration is going up. The amount of precipitation will probably go up. But also we're going to have higher temperatures, we're going to have more heat stress, we're going to have more intense droughts, more frequent bushfires. So it's very difficult to say how different forest communities are going to change with climate change. We would expect a contraction in some areas. We expect some loss of biodiversity as we have the effects of natural hazards, droughts and bushfires. We may expect some forests to expand. We may have some areas that were in the further future, we may have some areas that were historically very dry that become greener. There are lots of different possibilities. But we do know that, having seen what happened through the last drought and the bushfires, that there is this potential for forests to be very badly affected, and to, you know, for some areas to undergo this kind of system change where you have a collapse, ecosystem collapse, and then you get a different system, you know, woodland turning into shrubland, or, you know, shrubland turning into grassland. Mm. But it's at the moment, one of the main reasons that we're doing the measurements that we're doing in that area is to try and get a better handle on what the risks are to those different ecosystems.
Mm. If you would get $50 million as a research grant, that's the last question. What would you do with it?
Yes, yes. $50
if you had that opportunity.
The Western Sydney Institute of Plant Hydraulics.
That sounds good. I hope I get a job there.
It'll be a great place to work. Free coffee for all.
Yeah. Well, Brendan, we're at the end. Thank you so much for your time. That was really interesting.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Sebastian. It's been great.
You listened to Up for Research, and if you liked what you heard about the research here at Western and the future of Australia's forests and how you can investigate plant water functions, then please share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for listening in, and enjoy the rest of your day.